Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Net. Our technical net has been going strong for almost 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together, and hopefully we teach each other, we learn from each other, we're informed and entertained. I hope so, at least. So welcome back for another episode of this. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay, if you need to reach me, email is as good as any method. That would be either for a mailbag question. We used to have those in the past, where people couldn't make it to the technical net, so they would email Mel, or they would email John in his day, and they would read it to Dick, A2RIW, and he would answer it. And we still continue that tradition, although not many people take advantage of it. The idea being that you can listen to us on an audio stream, which I'll mention a little bit later on, or you can wait until later on when it is uploaded to an archival site, and you can listen to the recording with the answer. Also, if you have any topics for discussion, this could either be a topic you want to present to the group if you're well-versed in it, or it could be one that you want to be part of a discussion, or it could be something where you just want to sit back and have other people talk about it. So that's topics. Another thing is puzzles. I'm always looking for puzzles. They're very rare, and the idea is to get your mind working. The journey is probably much more important than the destination. And so I prefer puzzles that can't be answered by just typing it into Google and 5 seconds later getting the answer. So that's puzzles. And also, if you have something space or NASA-related and want Paul to hear about it, you can either email him directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com, or if you email me, I will forward it to him. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have a link page of interesting articles, YouTube, all kinds of fun stuff that I've seen over the past week that I've cut and pasted, and I post it every week in my link page. You can get to that by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the link page. It's available 24/7. I keep it up for a long, 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 long time. We have a chat room. Sometimes the chat room is very busy, sometimes it's very quiet. You can get to the chat room by typing chat@ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, I provide an audio stream on the internet, so if you don't have a radio or you're a little too far away and you, for one reason or another, don't want to use the Echolink node, which we provide as well, I provide an audio stream. So if you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, that will give you the audio stream. Again, technet.ac2gs.com. And I used to provide it solely for the technical net, but a few people asked me to extend it for the rest of the week so they could listen in to what's going on in Glen Oak. So I do. Available pretty much 24/7. Occasionally I have to reboot the computer, but otherwise it's there. And last but not least, Mike, KC2NJI, has an archive site. He has archived the technical net as far back as September of 2006. He's had over 1 million visitors. It's at amateurradio.tv. And you can go back in time and listen to the wisdom of some very smart amateur radio operators who have either moved away from the area or they passed away and become silent keys. So keep that all in mind. Let me drop for a second, and then I'll be back with my plans for tonight. Okay. We're going to have our usual questions. If you have a question or if you have a topic for discussion or comments to be made, we'll write down it. We'll write you down on the list. The first people to check in will be the first people to ask questions. I would prefer the first few people to have amateur radio-related questions. As the night progresses, as always, we open up the questions to any science and or technology-based topic, and I'll try to do my best and get the help of many very smart people listening in who participate and teach us new and interesting things. Also tonight, ChatGPT probably will return in our discussion. I was able to coerce it into providing a text puzzle. It was not an easy thing, but it, after a while I was able to nurse one out of its text files. And also, I did a little experiment. If you're reading newspapers, they are talking about ChatGPT passing bar exams and medical exams. So I wondered if it would pass an FCC extra exam. So hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk about that sometime in the middle of my segment. I'm looking forward to that. I hope you are too. Anyway, let me drop and ask for anyone with questions or comments or topics to give me their first name and their call sign.
10-6 GM, up to others.
Wes recognized. Anyone else here to put their name down on the list for tonight?
N2 MJS Manuel Manhattan. Just check it in.
Okay, Manuel, thank you for checking in. Anyone else out there want to put their name on the list for questions or comments or topics for tonight?
KC2SHO Kilo Charlie 2 Sierra Hotel Oscar.
Yes, John, welcome back. I was so pleased when I looked under my IRLP screen and I saw Los Alamos and I knew it had to be John. Welcome back. It's been too long.
It's been far too long of a hiatus from ham radio and the TechNet for me, so I'm excited. Continue on, we'll talk real soon.
Okay, very good, John. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. So if you have a question or a topic for discussion or a comment to make, please give me your first name and your call sign. We'll put you on the list. Okay, it's going to start a little slow this night. Not unusual. Wesley, are your questions kind of amateur-related or not quite amateur-related? So, you know, whether we take you first or second or something, so I just want to get an idea.
Not quite amateur-related.
Okay, so I guess we'll slide you in the number two slot and get back to John again. Again, welcome back to Among Us. You were missed. I scan IRLP. I don't think I've seen Canada or Ontario for a month or so, which concerns me a little bit. We did a little maintenance on the IRLP node, so I hope we didn't lose anyone up north. But John, do you have any topics or comments tonight?
You're saying John, but I thought there was another station in between there. Was that to me?
The other station is Wesley. Wesley has questions, but they're not really amateur radio related. So usually we take those type of questions a little bit after we you know, we like to at least start talking about amateur radio at the top of the technical net.
Okay, real good. Yeah, great to be back. Blew the dust off the IRLP node. Well, let me back up a second. Talking to a local friend, and we got the radios out December sometime, and I started charging the handhelds. We hadn't seen the chargers in who knows how long, and started playing with the radios and started building my shack up again, and I blew the dust off the IRLP node, and I got that connected, and to my surprise, with very little trouble, it seems to be working just fine, and enjoying ham radio and the IRLP node again. Let me drop it for 1 second. And of course, we didn't get in last week, but getting active with the forums and the groups on, you know, places like Facebook And I've been steering a lot of people over to the TechNet archive because it's just such a wealth of information. And, well, I also just miss hearing Dick's voice, of course. And I'm going to listen to every TechNet archive I can. I'll be skipping some things, of course, you know. But going through each one looking for that real gold and keeping a mental note or maybe even writing down where to find certain information. So that's really my only comment this evening. I don't really have a technical question. Using the archives as a great way to relearn, reinforce things I already know, and maybe also help myself become a better explainer of these things because I've got decades in the RF industry, but sometimes I struggle to get the point across, and I just think Dick was so good at that we can all listen to his words and maybe extrapolate ways to explain things. So that's my comment for this evening. Good to hear your voice again and all the other familiar voices out here. Look forward to participating more and being a part of the NET AC2GS from KC2SHO.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. He had a great way of explaining things. I particularly love the way he explained electromagnetic waves, standing waves kind of rippling off of an antenna. And it's sort of a shame. It reminds me, Eric, who also became a silent key, kept on nagging and nudging him to kind of sit down in front of a camera and do a presentation on antenna theory. That would have been a fascinating thing, but they were never able to kind of schedule that. So that's a shame. But yeah, he lives on many hours of MP3 files over at amateurradio.tv. Just as a little add-on, if you don't know what's been going on with the repeater lately, the technical staff has added an All-Star link in addition to its IRLP node and its EchoLink node. It now has an All-Star link. So they're expanding their capabilities as we speak.
That's good news. IRLP seems to be the loser in the IRLP All-Star Wars, so at some point here I'm going to need to build a new node and make it an All-Star / IRLP node, probably, something like that. So that's good to know. I'm glad to see that upgrade happening.
Yeah, in addition, they changed the link up. In the old days, the link was a simplex RF feed. Now I think it goes through the internet protocols, and it's now a duplex. So there are times that some guy will start transmitting on Selden, another one will transmit on Glen Oak, and you'll be able to hear the duet.
Roger that. Well, better than a complete block, I guess. So, in my comment too on wouldn't that have been great to get some video of a really organized course? Not a course, but the way he explained it, to get an organized way of putting that information into a class of sorts, I guess. I don't know if I'm coming up with the right terms, but it's also piecemeal. Maybe we can take the old files and organize them in a way that kind of puts it all together in that fashion, you know.
Yeah, I know Mike, the guy who runs the archive site, and many times I've submitted recordings to him when his recordings were not up to snuff. And I mentioned to him that maybe we could kind of outsource indexing on a kind of individual basis, that everyone can kind of take one file and listen to it and supply a sort of index. So you spread the labor around. We talked about it, and we talked about the possible ways of doing it on a website, but that never quite came to fruition. The early portions are indexed, but I guess after a while it just became too much work. So there are years and years and years of files that no one's put an index to. You just kind of turn it on, listen. I remember I did that for, I think it was 2010 or 29, a few years before I was licensed. And sure enough, Dick was talking to Wesley. So sometimes things don't change that much.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I've often thought, and I started, you know, listening from the beginning again recently, so that stuff is indexed pretty well, like you said. And I've often thought on some of the later things that aren't indexed. Maybe it doesn't have to be that everything is indexed perfectly, but if you could just comment on each file and give a timestamp of what your comment is, it might be that the most interesting things will just naturally end up indexed. And again, maybe it won't be perfect, maybe it won't be all-inclusive, but it would be a way to get started if any listener or browser of that material could just make a comment on what they found useful, or hey, maybe even questions could be posted there. Hey, this is great, this is wonderful, but what about this additional information I'm looking for? Could turn into TechNet content, perhaps even. I don't know. Just thinking out loud as we're talking here.
Yeah, I suggested to Mike that he set up a Wikipedia type of a page, because the source code is open source, so anyone with a web browser could set up their own Wikipedia, and we just make it a topic of the technical net, and people can make entries to different segments, different weeks, and different segments, and it kind of grow organically. But again, I don't know, it fizzled out. I'll have to bring it up to Mike once again and see if, because, you know, he's a busy guy. We're all kind of busy people, so I understand that you only have a limited amount of time to spend on these hobbies that don't make you any money.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do this for fun. This is hobby stuff. If there's time, if there's energy, if there's that kind of push, then, yeah, that's all great. But we definitely can't make anyone's life miserable with these kinds of requests. It's got to be something that people want to do. And don't know what I could do. I do have some computer, you know, strengths, if you will. And if there's anything I can help with, please let me know. Life is a little busy with three kids and a full-time job, but getting active in the hobby again, if there's any way I can help, don't be afraid to ask.
Okay, very good, John. I will keep you in mind. I will bring that up also to Mike. I think a lot of people would be interested, I'm not expecting any kind of professional indexing service, but a nice rough approximation, some, you know, high points that people particularly like and kind of reinforce each other would probably be good. There's more than enough people, I think, that are interested in the archives that wouldn't mind kind of grabbing a few and taking a listen and scribbling some notes. So I'll submit it again as a proposal to him. Maybe this time he'll have a little bit more free time to do it. So we'll see how it goes. But John, it's always a pleasure to hear from you, and I hope as future episodes of the Technical Net occur that you'll continue to join us and participate. It could be a real fun experience. We have a lot of very, very clever people, which I include you in that list, and it's always good to hear them. So great to have you back, John.
Yeah, and let me say that as I'm listening, if I get to the non-indexed files, perhaps I'll start taking some notes. Again, the most interesting things, I think, are the most important to get indexed. So the discussions that really explain some of these topics that we love so much, transmission line theory, antenna theory, even just a couple of months of 2000 6 that I've listened to so far. Such a wealth of information. And in many cases, you know, he'll explain it one way then, and then another way he might explain a similar or the same subject another way, and it just keeps building. It is really good. But enough on that beating a dead horse, I suppose. It's good to be back, and I look forward to participating. And with the node, that makes it easy. You know, I can just wander around the house and still be as much of a dad as I can be and have the radio nearby, cook dinner or whatever, and be able to monitor and hopefully even participate. But real good. Yeah, unless you have anything to say, 73 for now, I'll be listening here, and I look forward to whatever the net brings tonight. AC2, GS. KC2, SHO. Good to hear your voice as well, Rick.
Okay, 73. John, you never know what the technical net will bring us. I've never been able to predict it, even in the midst of it. It might quiet down. It might get loud and boisterous. You never quite know. So, 73, and I'll speak to you down the line. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Limar technical net. We're open for business. We already have one person waiting to chat with some topics. If there's anyone else out there, especially if there's some amateur radio-related topics for discussion, please feel free. Give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, well, hopefully there'll be some activity later on in the evening. But Wesley, do you want to bring up your topics now?
Yeah, it's a series of simple subjects. I sent you a few emails before, so it's like a few minutes each one. The cell-based meat. So we have people who are. Let me jump. Okay, so we have people who are vegan or vegetarian, and they don't eat meat. And it is not only because of high cholesterol, but it is from ethical reasons too. So now we have a meat that is grown from the tissue of the animals, doesn't require to kill the animal, and it's on sale. That means you can eat it. But in order to do it, you have to go to Singapore. They sell it right now in the restaurants, and I would like to know the opinion of Dr. Roy. Back to you.
Okay, I wasn't quite sure that was what was going on because the videos that you sent me kind of mentioned it as a kind of a research that's ongoing. There's a lot of limitations. They mentioned there that the upscalability is not figured out yet, so they can't produce much. The cost is apparently high. And they require calf fetal serum to maintain the cell line. So you're still kind of stuck with live cattle and such to get supplies for it. So, and they can only produce the paste stuff. If you've ever seen really bad documentaries on things like, I don't know if it's McDonald's or something, where they show you a kind of pulverized chicken muscles, so it kind of oozes out like Play-Doh, and then they color it pink because I think it's more of a tan or yellow. And, it's not a steak. It's not anything looks like a steak as far as I'm aware. The only thing they could make is sort of hamburger patties, but they can't insert the fat that everyone likes with their meat. One of the reasons why Wagyu beef is expensive and beloved is the marbling and the low melting point fat that is spread out through the architecture. So there's no architecture, there's no fat, and I think in the video they described it as meat-flavored toast or something. So that doesn't particularly sound good. And I'm not even quite sure if true vegetarians would still touch it, because, again, you have to play around with calf serum in order to grow the culture medium. So, I don't know. Interesting, but at this point, I don't think it's going to be a scalable product in the near future.
What it says in here, actually, it smells like chicken if you have a chicken meat. It tastes like chicken. And it doesn't really differ from the chicken, apart from one thing, it doesn't have a bones in it. So it's cultivated meat. It's grown from the animal cells in production facility and doesn't involve killing some animals. The Food and Drug Administration has taken steps towards allowing it for the first time ever to be accessible and sold in the United States of America. The message is from 22nd, 11, 17. Okay, so that is 2 months ago. Back to you.
Okay, I would find it uncomfortable knowing that it was grown from cows, but it tastes like a chicken. The concept of it tastes like a chicken is usually the ultimate non-polite, you know, it's kind of like, gee, she doesn't sweat too much for a fat woman. Pardon me, my sexism from the 70s and 80s. Beef should taste like beef. I don't think you're going to get a big market of people buying synthesized beef that tastes like chicken. They'll just buy chicken.
Oh, I do understand very much your point. But a few others, maybe ask, who have a problem with that, is slaughtering of a mammal, and knowing that we belong to a group of mammals, we are actually considered to be cannibals, because we eat our own. Although it's a different kind of mammals, we are mammals. So instead of being cannibal and killer or hunter, what is the pleasure of being hunter? Pleasure of seeing other mammal dying in blood and pain? That's what is being called the sport? Ridiculous. Back to you.
Well, I tend to think you're doing a bit of apples and oranges. Most of us are not hunters. There are people, and I'm sure there's a couple of people out there listening tonight that own guns, and they like to go during the different seasons and shoot at animals. I've never shot at any animal, but I'm not a vegetarian. These animals would not have come into creation if they weren't viable for farmers and these people to make a profit off of them. So they're bred to be butchered. It's gone parallel with human civilization for thousands of years. I don't think it's going to stop any day too soon. Usually there are rules and regulations that limit the cruelty. But again, is it, I guess, better to have never lived than to have lived and then be killed and sold for food to keep people alive? I don't know. Again, we get into the philosophical moral construct. I think if you kill animals in a relatively pain-free type of situation, we're animals. I agree with you, but we're human beings. We are self-aware, and we have a much more complex cognitive abilities. You could say that a raccoon is a mammal. So if a raccoon moved in with you, would you let him stay because he's another mammal? Or would you get him the hell out of your house before he ripped it apart?
I love your comments. Dr. Roy, you are amazing. Usually when I bring up the argument in the group of physicists I'm familiar with, I try to make it strong. But you don't have to try. You are strong in your argument. So, what I'm going to tell you is, imagine that you have an average human animal. Like the average one. Human animal, the mammal, walking on the street. And one day, his needs of the heart transplantation. And he needs the heart from the pig. Only that shortly after that, he's gonna eat some pork because he likes it. How would you comment that?
Well, again, it's not that you killed the pig out of malice or anything. The pig would most likely have ended up being killed for any of a number of different reasons. So, because we utilize other living things in the same way we utilize non-living things, we rip up the earth to get rare metals and such to build our fancy little gadgets. But it's not under any kind of, I think, malice. It's simply how you get the material. Again, you can do it better or worse depending upon, you know, your inclinations, your ethics, your morals. So you could rip up the earth and make it unlivable for 1,000 years, or you can do it in a way that's less destructive to the environment. But, I mean, the environment is as important as any animal. And why should we differentiate from mammals versus invertebrates or fish? You know, you can go down the entire life chain and say, you know, what makes man special? Now, there's really no such thing as a kind of pyramid where we are the ultimate evolution of biology. We're just a branch that has been incredibly successful. We might end up being the most self-destructive species ever to evolve. Time only will tell. But there is no such thing as highly evolved or lowly evolved. Evolution is an ongoing process that affects every living organism, be it a single-cell bacteria or a multicellular massive thing like a whale and everything in between.
You mentioned mammoth, right?
Well, you mentioned mammals, so I mentioned mammals. But again, mammals are not inherently at the top of some pyramid. It's just one of the branches of the tree. Life isn't really a pyramid, and evolution isn't really a pyramid. It's best to be understood as a series of branches from a very, very big tree.
Okay. So mammals, we all belong to mammals. We have the same organs. And now we're taking the advantage of modern medicine and surgery, and we can have transplantation of the closest animal to us in organs, which is pig. Let me jump. And the problem that many people have, but not all of them, is that we don't have to eat meat. Yes, we like to eat meat, but for that we have to kill. Putting on aside those guys who call themselves the sport people with the gun, the fatty belly killers, going somewhere and killing other animals. Because they like it.
They like the blood. They like them dying. They like their pain.
Let me drop.
Oh yeah. So we don't have to eat meat. We like to eat meat. So it's not the primary necessity for us to survive. And then we have a solution. And that solution is meat. But we don't have to kill to get this meat. So we say about ethics as a problem. You mentioned from the beginning of that, we don't go to the philosophy. Well, the philosophy is a matter of the all sciences, unless I'm wrong. Back to you.
Well, Stephen Hawking's annoyed a heck of a lot of philosophers by writing in one of the earlier pages of one of the versions of his famous book that philosophy was a dead field and was a pointless exercise. So that really annoyed philosophers. But getting back into it, human mammals and such are classified as three different types. Herbivores are designed to eat plants. They have evolved over millions of years to be optimal at extracting nutrients from plants. Carnivores are designed relatively differently. They have shorter lengths of bowel because they require less efficient GI systems because absorbing meat is much more efficient than extracting nutrients out of plants. So they are significantly different than the herbivores. We evolved to be omnivores. We're someplace in the middle. We're not particularly optimized completely for living with plant food. We can have a little bit of both. And in fact, nutritionally, unless you supplement your diet with vitamins and all kinds of things, it's not terribly healthy to have a 100% vegetarian diet. So, evolutionarily speaking, we are not herbivores. We are omnivores. And there's a price to be paid. If your moral and ethical aspects limit you to plant food and you are okay with taking supplements, that's fine. It's probably not the best approach given the million years of evolution towards an omnivore diet. So, and if you want to supplement it by cellular growth, again, that's your right and privilege. The only problem is, once again, that at this point, the technology, I think, is rather early. I don't think it's scalable. I don't think it's cost-effective. I don't think most people would prefer it over steak. I love steak. I don't see anything particularly wrong with steak. I remember being endlessly amused. I took in a seminar, a cardiology seminar, in which during lunch was served steak. So, I was amused by the fact that, the fat in steak is probably not good for the heart. Let me drop. So, that's my two cents worth. I wouldn't kind of juxtapose that everyone who eats meat is a guy who goes out and slaughters wild animals or such. Most of us are removed from it. The concept of an abattoir is an alien thing to many of us. I grew up about a block away from a chicken warehouse and realized the charming odor that chickens had while they were alive. Thankfully, they smell considerably different when you roast them. And I went to a junior high school that right off the elevated train that I went there was another chicken warehouse. So I, for some odd reason, over the last 40, 50 years, the number of Brooklyn chicken warehouses have disappeared. The two that I was aware of in my childhood, I think, are long since gone. But that's human beings. Maybe someday they'll be able to synthesize a good steak complete with a bone. That would be nice.
Hey, is he Tim Kim?
Yes, Jeff.
Is this a tech nut tonight, or are we doing philosophy and chickens? Just questions.
Yes, Jeff. Well, I would like to do amateur radio. I asked people to do amateur radio. I pleaded with people to do amateur radio. But apparently no one was in the mood. If you're in the mood, I would certainly be interested.
All right, so put me in line for an amateur radio question, please.
Okay, consider it done.
Thank you very much for that. Any kind of simulation is good as long as it works. And I have nothing against people having different opinions. This is a technique. But if nobody responds, then I was taking to talk. And that's why we're talking about different subjects. I have a few other things to discuss. One of them is three digits. A code word that instead of GPS is giving you precise position anywhere in the world, if you wish to. Then I have a exoskeleton, which may be important for the people who have a disability, walking disability. It is now allowed in the United States. And then I have a puzzle, but I think not that difficult one, and a few other things. So if you want to take the ham radio question, be my guest. Thank you.
AC2GS. Yeah, I think that would be a good idea, Wesley. We'll slide Jeff up into this slot, and we'll take you after Jeff. Has this question, because I would like to kind of keep it on the early time with amateur radio. You know, a little bit later on, I want to kind of discuss ChatGPT and artificial intelligence and my results when I gave ChatGPT a extra exam and the results and what that means for the future and such. That's sort of tangentially amateur radio, but not really. So, yeah, let's first go to Jeff. And thank you very much, Wesley, for offering to exchange places with Jeff. So, Jeff, you're up now.
All right, Roy. And, Wesley, thank you both very much for accepting the question. The question is about balance. It's something you guys have talked about at length in the past. And similar to a previous question I asked, on the net, which was how is the efficiency rating that comes from the programs that tell us about the efficiency of a mag loop. I said it's the first thing that those programs puke out is a number of with stating efficiency, and of course your answer was when the rubber hits the road, everything everything goes to pot and things change very quickly. So those are strictly theoretical. This question is about balance, and it's similar, and I expect the answer is going to be similar, but I was hoping for something grounded in reality. And the question goes as such. Let me drop. I was on a net this morning with a bunch of guys from the Bronx, and we were talking about building our own balance. And I built several, some of which had failed under extreme duress of high wattage, high output. And I had kind of, on the back of an envelope, rated that balun at about 300 to 500 watts. And again, no reason why, just kind of thought about the size of the ferrite, the size of the wire, and generally the insulating properties that I thought it might have. And that started to, and when that failed at 1500 watts, I didn't do that, of course, but when it failed, I began to think, how do you actually, in practice, rate the power limitations of a balun? And I began to think about many different things, the Teflon coating and the various potting and all that sorts of stuff, but I really have never seen in any handbook where it said, you know, at this standing wave ratio, at this power, at this voltage and current, this is what the rating should be for a balun. And it's always written on the back of the balun what the rating is. So where do they come up with those numbers? That's the short version of the question. Right.
Okay. I tend to believe it is a cross between trial and, you design something based on a certain mixture, be it 61 or 31 or 43. Then you get different toroids of different mass, and you wind them the number of winds, and the heat dissipation causes the ferrite material to change, and the permeability goes out the window, and you're stuck with a non-ferrite material after too much heat dissipation. So my assumption is, along with marketing tweaking it, because it tends to be very related to the company that you buy them from. If you take a look at similarly rated ballasts and you pop the top and look inside, if you can, usually the higher end companies that make these things have much bulkier ferrite cores. They have higher quality, thicker gauge wires, Teflon insulators and such, and that's part of what you pay with those heavy duty prices. So I am unfamiliar with a simple mathematical equation that they simply plug in. I think they just design test ballasts and run them until they stop working, and then figure out exactly what is the high end to rate them at, where marketing is happy and the technical department is happy. But if there are electrical engineers out there that know differently, that there's a magic equation to plug it all in, please feel free.
WS2N. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England River. Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio.
Yes, Paul. I think the IRLP link is calling its name because John just reconnected to it. So what's your comment?
Okay, I heard that. Yeah, I had a ballon years ago. What's the one with the core letters? Start with a W. W5AU. I think it was. Anyway, it was it's a popular company. I don't know if they're still around. And the whole antenna came down one time and it cracked, you know. I was going to go get a new one, but I decided, well, let me go look inside. Opened it up, and it was a heavy gauge wire, you know. We're looking at, definitely number 12, you know, maybe even bigger, as I remember. Heavy diameter. So I would imagine it's based on that, you know, how many watts could travel through the different gauge wires. And this thing was rated at 1,500, you know. It's just a one-to-one ballon that I use. Back to you, Ron.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's my understanding that there is more than one failure point for a ballon, and one of them certainly is that if you have too small a gauge wire as the turret, as the whole thing heats up, you can get failure in the wiring. But also, the toroid itself comes into action. There are times when people discover that their ballon no longer is working, and they'll open it up, and it doesn't really look that bad. There's no burn mark. The wire is perfectly fine, but if they have an opportunity to test the toroid, it's no longer acting like it did originally because the ferrite mixture is somewhat sensitive to being overheated. In the same sort of way, I guess, to a degree, that if you take a magnet and you heat it up beyond its curie point, it loses its magnetic field and has to be re-established. It's much more difficult to do that with ferrite stuff. So ferrites can also overheat, and the material in them can stop working. And the way of getting around that is to add a lot more mass to the ferrite so that it has more space to dissipate the thermal issues. So, yeah, the wire is important, but also the toroid is important as well.
Okay. Well, what's causing the heat? if you keep the heat down with the thick enough wire, maybe you wouldn't get the heat, and therefore it wouldn't affect the toroid. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Back to you.
Well, you got, in some cases, 1,500 watts of RF current flowing through the wires. You have a flux of magnetic field in the toroid being switched back and forth at rapid rate. No ferrite toroid is 100% efficient, and so a lot of energy causing magnetic fields to reverse millions of times a second is going to produce some degree of heat. And heat is always the enemy of just about anything other than when you're stuck in a cold a house. So all these electrical things are not 100% efficient. Where most of the energy ends up going ultimately is in waste heat.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Very good. I don't run a full gallon here, so I don't really worry about it. But you know, my problem was that the ballon, the plastic, you know, was made of plastic and actually cracked. You know, finally, you know, hairline crack, and then I didn't sit and then put it up in the air, and then through the time water got in and ice. So then it was over. Then I realized it's time to take it apart. That's what I discovered. I was kind of surprised how thick the wires were. Anyway, back to your work.
Yeah, also the weatherproofing of the enclosure is a failure point. You know, like most things, there's certainly, I think, more than one failure point in almost any design for anything. But again, I'm willing to bet that most people kind of ballpark it from past experiences, and then hopefully the better people will actually test it under combat conditions to ensure that their legitimate run of their design is capable to survive past its published maximum rating. But I don't think there's a magic equation for us, unfortunately. I understand you would like one. I like things to be kind of, you know, written down and documented and relatively simple and pain-free. But, you know, as we talked before, although you hate hearing it probably, the laws of physics are good as a theoretical basis, but in the real world, a lot of things break down. We talk all the time about center-fed dipoles having a theoretical impedance of 76 ohms and having no points at the right angles, at the edge of the legs of the dipole. But as we all don't operate in space, when we take it down to Earth, the interactions with Earth ground totally screw that up, lower its impedance, and kill that null point at either end of the dipole and make it messier than the theoretical equations would suggest. But, you know, that's life.
It's typical. By the way, let me see if I have it. That was the W2AU, I said five, W2AU series of ballons. That's the one I have.
Oh, okay. I mean, there's a lot of very good, well-known brands of ballon makers these days. There's this great book from, I forget his name, he's a silent key now. He wrote a lot of technical books, and he wrote one on ballon design. I was kind of hoping it would be a little bit more theoretical than it was. It was very practical. There were a lot of pictures of the way that ballons get together, and trifiller ballons are particularly confusing to see pictures of and figuring it out in your head. But I've not yet found a really good book that discusses the technical aspects of ballons except for the superficial aspects of them.
Casey,
yes, Jeff.
Okay, so a couple things. Number one, The failure mode of the particular balun I was talking about was an arcing between the wire and the ferrite, which was very, very obvious when I took it apart. And I redesigned that balun with actually a smaller ferrite, but with heavier gauge wire that was Teflon coated. And I'm sure that's gone up to 1,500 watts many times in the person's shack, and it has not failed as yet. So in this case, maybe the permeability and the heating is not quite as good because there's less mass, but there's no arcing. So at least I've taken care of that particular part of the rating. Another question was, I'm sure you're familiar with this vertical broadband antenna called the CHA-250B, the Comet CHA-250B. There's a write-up on that, kind of a retroactive deconstructive study by Gulf 8, Juliet, November, Juliet. He studies the way the balun is made in that thing. And on his page, if you Google his call sign and that antenna, you'll see about halfway down, maybe not halfway down, there's a picture of thermal imaging of the balun, part of it heating up at low frequency, and part of it heating, a different part of it heating up at high frequency. So the question there is, number one, I mean, that's a very complicated transformer, the way it's wound. And he has a picture of his idea of the way the transformer works. But it's obvious that there's different frequency response in that particular balun that heats up different parts of the toroids, because it's two stacked sets of toroids. One question that I've always had in the back of my mind that I haven't tested out yet is if you take two different mixes, like a 43 and a 61, and stack them together, and then wind them as a 4-to-1 or a 9-to-1 or 49-to-1 or whatever, and load them up at different frequencies, would those two ferrites heat up differentially? That's a question for the NAT QSL.
Okay, that's an interesting one. I would think that given the different permeability for the different mixtures, you would have a thermal difference. They would tend to try to equilibrate, but I think inherently in the fact that they're both different mixtures, and that means different permeabilities, different responses, the different frequency ranges, that, yeah, you would have a thermal differential. Touching back on the CHA-250B, I probably store that website. What I sort of took away from it is that it's a kind of a dubious design. What it effectively seems to be doing is it is dissipating your RF in the balun. It is a highly, as you mentioned, it's a highly lossy balun design. And I at first, you know, why would you want a balun to be that lossy? Well, if you're concerned about reflected power of a mismatch, it will be far less evident. It's a sort of way of fooling your SWR meter, because since so much of it gets dissipated in a non-radiating fashion as thermal heat, which is useless, it will look like it has a better SWR when you do the sweeps and allow you to sell this antenna as a much broader frequency range antenna than it really should be. It goes kind of back to when we were discussing traveling wave antennas that have resistors at the very end that dissipate half of the RF energy because it doesn't reflect back. And although it gives you a better SWR visually, the efficiency of the antenna is not terribly good.
Stacy to Peel. Yeah, Roger, and I agree. Most people, if you look at the EHAM reviews for this, I would say there's half of the people are sold on it because they've made a contact on it, and the other half of the people call it a dummy load. And I think you're right that the truth of the matter is that it's closer to the latter, in which it's just really tricking the system by dissipating some of the power that would otherwise be reflected. It's like using a very, very long piece of coax, I guess, that's lossy. Anyway, those are the questions for this evening, and I really appreciate you letting me cut in like that. And I will turn it back to that AEC-2PL. Thank you.
Okay, very good, Jeff, anytime. And don't disparage the beloved dummy load. I do a 10-meter net most Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock on 28.380, and we had to move a little bit over because